I'm Mike Schuster. This is Day to Day. And on Wednesdays, we hear from our listeners, starting today with another example of listeners keeping us honest. In this week's Unger Report, we said the game show Jeopardy was celebrating its 20th anniversary this year. Listener Graham Smith offered this correction. Hardcore trivia experts are no doubt aware that Jeopardy originally debuted in 1964 with Art Fleming as host, while the syndicated version with Alex Trebek debuted in 1984. Thanks for that, Mr. Smith. And a question about Andy Bauer's explainer on why hurricanes don't occur on the West Coast. Andrew Davis writes, noting that some storms in the Pacific Northwest pack winds of over 75 miles an hour, why are our storms only called storms, he asks, and not something more indicative of their power? Here, once again, our answer man, Slate's Andy Bowers.
To qualify as a hurricane or a typhoon, a cyclone must originate in tropical waters. In the Northwest, windstorms are spawned by low-pressure systems that form north of the tropics. The National Weather Service says they occur each fall and winter, sometimes causing hurricane-strength winds. The granddaddy of Pacific Northwest windstorms occurred on Columbus Day, October 12, 1962. That storm, which hit the Northern California, Oregon, and Washington coasts, killed 46 people, injured hundreds more, and knocked out power to millions. Now, what to call these windstorms? The more technical might choose potent mid-latitude cyclone. The most serious storms are also known as blowdowns if they knock over significant numbers of trees. Or you could just call them tempests, but don't call them hurricanes.
Slate's Andy Bowers. Hope that helps, Mr. Davis. We got lots of comments regarding Madeline Brand's interview with Curtis White about his book, The Middle Mind. White is critical of, among other things, the NPR program Fresh Air and its host, Terry Gross. Here's a bit of what he said.
She interviews artists too frequently. The interview makes a turn to the personal. It doesn't have anything to do to reveal how art functions in our culture.
Among the more polite responses, this from Neil Chatterjee, who listens to WHYY in Philadelphia. Mr. White seems to be suffering from a massive cerebral hemorrhage. His aloof snobbishness is naively single-minded, subjective, outdated, and ignorant. A bit of outrage as well over James Brawley. Last week we ran his tale of finding a psychiatrist who would cure him of his urge to philander.
I look at her legs and say, I don't know, but I'd like to try. Good, she says. I think I can help you. And I believe her, and so does my health insurance company. So once a week, I get to talk to a beautiful smart woman, other than my beautiful smart wife, about anything I want, absolutely guilt-free.
Think about how irritating the story is to people without health care or someone parting with a serious chunk of their minimum wage check for basic coverage. No wonder health care costs are so high when we've all got to pitch in to help subsidize his midlife crisis. I can see why he's got to pay people to listen to him. Siobhan Ruck, San Francisco.
And finally, lots of letters about the song and story Alex Chadwick brought back from Mali. Here's a sample.
Right when the song started, I realized these were children singing. Save for the Bismillah towards the end, I did not understand a single word in that song. Yet I cannot describe the effect that the haunting tune and those voices have left on my mind. All I can say is that by the time your story ends, my eyes are moist at the edges. Warm regards, Rochelle, in Los Angeles.
Share your thoughts with us as well. Our address is daytoday@npr.org.